Chapter 5. Embarrassment. Sin sat on a rock in the pasture above the village and contemplated the tiny microcosm in which he was stuck. He hated this place. He hated being an invalid. He hated not being able to do anything. He hated everyone here. He wanted to go home. Okay, maybe he didn't hate everyone here. Princess was nice. In fact, Princess was wonderful. Just thinking of her lightened his mood, even though she was part of the reason he was sulking far away from everyone. She and everyone else had laughed at him, and that was something Sin hated most of all. He was used to being the smartest and the most athletic of his friends, and even if he hadn't been, no one would have dared laugh at him back home. At least he didn't inherit his uncle's temperament. Sin might feel offended and angry, but he didn't have his family's legendary fierce and searing rage. His uncle would have launched into a fight this morning, regardless of his physical condition. Sin sighed. As much as he didn't like being the butt of a joke, he had to admit he brought it on himself. 3 weeks ago, he had recovered enough to at least sit outside Tate's hut. He quickly saw how everyone in the village, except him, was continually scurrying around. There was always much needing to be done in a community this size, especially during the all-too-short growing season, and everyone pulled their own weight without complaint. There were undoubtedly many people back home who considered Sin to be a spoiled rich boy, but his uncle abhorred laziness and insisted that everyone in his family work hard. So Sin offered to help the villagers as soon as he was able, but unfortunately, he knew next to nothing about rural life. His first assignment was to feed the chickens. The birds mostly scavenged for bugs throughout the village yard and in the straw bedding. This act not only meant that they cost little to raise, but that they also provided a much-appreciated sanitation service to the community. But chickens also provided eggs and ultimately meat for the villagers, and an ant and bedbug diet was insufficient for them to deliver much of either. The villagers augmented the hens' diets with old grains and seeds to increase their size and egg production. Feeding them was a simple task, usually assigned to the younger children, but Princess suggested Sin give it a try to help out. Unfortunately, Sin's inexperience with spreading grain, coupled with the awkwardness of his crutch, meant that he spilled the entire bag of seeds in one giant pile, rather than distributing a portion of the grain evenly across the ground. It was an understandable mistake, and no great harm was done. The chickens appreciated the extra food and not having to work for it, but little Sylvia and Gemma, who were 4 and 2, both had a good laugh at his struggle, and Princess tried to hide a grin as she agreed that this was, perhaps, not the best job for him. Princess had become his liaison with the community. She was one of his original rescuers and had taken the most interest in him. In fact, he had learned that the girl had rarely left his side while he was unconscious, and Tate confided that he probably wouldn't have survived without her efforts. She was smart, pretty, and kind, and Sin longed for her company whenever she was away. She was also the daughter and granddaughter of the 2 village leaders, which was why Sin suspected she was given leeway to make more decisions than others. Her next suggestion was that he help with the dishes. Usually, Sin would have felt this menial task was below him, but there didn't seem to be much of a labor hierarchy in this village. He had seen Orvin, one of the village elders, hauling cooking refuse down to the forest edge. No senior official from his hometown would ever consider clearing a dinner table, much less hauling out the trash. So, Sin agreed to help with the dishes. He also liked the fact that this meant he would get to spend more time with Princess. Unfortunately, Sin didn't know how to wash dishes either, especially in a stream. He splashed and rubbed the plates with sand the way the lady showed him, but they never seemed to be quite as clean. Also, Sin's time with Princess wasn't quite like he had hoped, since Bonnie and Amity were also there. His technique improved to a point where his dishes didn't need to be rewashed, and he was determined to be successful. But the women's constant chatter was driving him crazy. Then, one day, he took his load of dishes farther upstream to prove how quickly he could clean them without all their mindless chit-chat. He was proud of his accomplishment until Princess and the others ran to him, screaming. He had washed his dishes upstream from where they fetched water, and now the formerly pristine pool where they dipped their buckets for drinking water was filled with mud, sand, and scraps of food. Again, they assured him that it could be fixed, but suggested that he might be better suited for a different chore. Sin wished he could do something other than a task suitable for a child, but he knew he wasn't physically up for splitting wood, tilling the land, repairing houses, or even carrying water. Princess tried to cheer him up and assured him that, despite their laughter at his failures, the entire community appreciated his efforts at fitting in. She somehow always managed to find a positive perspective, and despite feeling sorry for himself, he began to feel better. He thanked her and noted that she had seemed exhausted lately. She smiled at him and said that visiting him, coupled with the intense spring farming, did leave her more tired than usual, but quickly added that she didn't mind. She just wished she could sleep in a little longer instead of always having to be the first one up to milk the goats. The next morning, Sin was outside her door within seconds of the black goat's pre-dawn headbutt. While Princess appreciated his helpfulness, she didn't think he was well suited for this particular task. She explained that the goats were finicky, even though they were used to her because she had been milking them since she was 8 years old. Sin, who was unaccustomed to failure, convinced her that he was a fast study and that he was confident he could quickly master something an 8-year-old girl had done. She relented, with grave misgivings, and he later wished she hadn't. Within an hour, the entire village was in hysterics as he put on a daybreak comedy show involving a frustrated and very muddy man trying to chase, tackle, and grope several highly agitated goats. Tate finally came out and put a stop to it, chastising him and Princess for risking injuring him again. Sin slunk off to the stream to wash off the mud at a point so far downstream he was almost in the forest. He might not be able to feed chickens, wash dishes, or milk goats, but he had at least learned not to muddy the drinking water. He ran into Princess's father on the way back to the village. Hugh took him aside and said, "Sin, stop trying so hard. You don't need to prove yourself to us. We've managed without your help before you arrived, and we can manage without it now as well. Just rest and get healthy." Sin looked at Hugh and thanked him, even though he could tell that they weren't managing very well. The villagers were all frightfully thin. The buildings were mostly watertight, but clearly aging. And although the village wall might appear substantial, he doubted it would really stop any sizable creature that wanted to get in. Besides, Sin despised defeat. He might not have inherited his family's famous temper, but the desire to win was in his genes. Hugh could see the young man's disappointment and made a suggestion. "The spring tilling was far too intense for someone in your condition, but we're done, and today we're beginning to plant. This is something the whole village does. Why don't you plant a row alongside Princess? She can show you how it's done, and I assure you that watching the seeds you plant grow into food which we can eat is a most satisfying experience." Sin thanked him and limped back to the village by his side. Hugh slowed his pace to match Sin's struggling gait, and Sin thought about the head of this small, rural village. Hugh was a true leader. He watched and listened to his people and gave well-considered advice. The man took the initiative to lead when it was needed and delegated responsibility when it wasn't. Above all else, Hugh cared for all his people. He even took in an unknown stranger with compassion that few people had for anyone outside their own family. This affable, common man who was now sharing cute stories about his daughter as they walked impressed Sin as someone who would rise to be a true leader no matter where he lived. Hugh was right. Sin thoroughly enjoyed helping plant the crops that morning. Hunching over to poke holes in the loosened soil and dropping in seeds was back-breaking work, but being out in the warm spring sunshine next to Princess felt terrific. Everyone spread out to plant their own furrow, and Sin's was at the far edge near the woods. This meant that the two of them were able to be almost alone as they chatted and furtively glanced at each other while planting their seeds. Sin managed to keep up with Princess's pace and felt proud that he had finally found something at which he didn't fail. Diera, the cook, ran the bell calling them to lunch, and Sin couldn't believe it was already midday, although his back assured him it was. It was then that Sin rose, looked at his work, and made two disturbing observations. The first was that everyone else's rows were at least four times as long as theirs. The isolation he had been enjoying had been due to Princess slowing her pace to remain close to him. The second was that, while every other row was perfectly straight with smoothly rounded mounds, his was crooked and looked as though he had trod all over it. Which he had. Princess saw his face fall and chuckled, "Don't worry, you'll get the hang of it. Besides, the plants don't care about neatness. They'll grow just fine however they're planted." Sin wasn't sure this was entirely true and was starting to feel disheartened again when Princess grabbed his hand and began skipping to the stream to wash up for lunch. His spirits soared at the touch of her fingers, and he even managed to see the humor in his short, wavy line of plantings. Princess possessed her father's compassion and innate ability to sense what people needed and to do the right thing. He guiltily hoped that her compassion and empathy for him were unique rather than being something she offered everyone, because despite feeling a bit like a prisoner in this isolated village, Sin was falling deeper in love with her. Princess finished her row that afternoon and offered to help Sin with his, but he wouldn't hear of it. He said that the only way he would learn would be through practice. So he continued planting on his own long after everyone else had left to do other tasks. It took him an extra day to complete his row, but the far end looked nearly as neat as the others by the time he finished. Darian even stopped by to congratulate Sin on his work. He was Doretta's husband and the man in charge of farming. "You're really getting the knack of this, Sin," Darian said. "Farming mostly involves hard work, perseverance, and common sense. We'll make you a fine farmer yet." Sin beamed at the compliment, but had no intention of staying for another season to hone his skills at farming. He had other plans for his life far outside of a field and well beyond this valley. Life in the village had settled down after the spring plantings were done, and this morning the villagers went out as a group to remove the weeds, which were starting to grow around the small seedlings, poking their heads through the soil. Princess explained that these first few weedings were critical to preventing the faster-growing weeds from stealing the sunlight and nutrients from the valuable crops. She showed Sin how to pull out the weeds without disrupting the seedlings. She explained how to differentiate the desired plants from the invaders, and after Sin demonstrated his understanding, put her head down and began to work. Weeding the field took much more concentration than planting seeds, so there was less talking and far less gazing at your neighbor. Sin still felt pride from Darian's compliment and was starting to understand Hugh's observation about how watching your own plants grow and mature presented a unique sense of accomplishment. He was, however, determined to not lag behind everyone else and to ensure his work was as thorough and neat as his neighbor's. Sin worked carefully, hard, and fast. His only glances up from his work involved occasional checks to ensure his pace was comparable to the others. He smiled when he saw that he and Princess were on par with the rest. Weeding was much slower than planting, and they were only a third of the way down their furrows when Diero's lunch bell sounded. Sin stood up and looked down his row with pride. His row was as neat and clean as all the rest, if not quite as perfectly straight. He turned to say something to Princess, but froze when he saw the look of horror on her face. It was then that he noticed that the rest of the villagers had stepped over to look at his work and were all staring in complete silence. Sin's stomach knotted up with a feeling of dread. "Sin," Princess whispered, "what have you done?" Sin had no idea what was wrong, but he could tell it was something awful. Before he could ask, Princess took his hand and looked up into his worried face. "You've pulled out all of your seedlings and left nothing but weeds," she groaned. "Everything you planted is gone." Sin pulled his hand out of hers and knelt down. He thought the baby plants in his row looked like the ones in hers at first. Then he noticed that his were all a bit taller and had slightly differently shaped leaves. He thought that his plantings appeared larger and different than hers simply because he had planted them with more care. He took a step back and, to his dismay, found small seedlings that perfectly matched hers in the unfinished end of his row. Sin knew that this not only meant he had wasted his time, but he had also lost precious seeds, which were needed to grow food for the winter. This was a stupid mistake that would hurt Princess and everyone else in the village, and it was not something that could be fixed. Sin felt the most failure and shame he had ever felt in his life. He was unable to face anyone at that moment. especially Princess, and did not want to be pitied or consoled. He put his head down and walked off, away from the field and away from the village. He needed to be alone, and with every footfall his anger grew towards the village, the people, the thieves who attacked him, and the awful plants that all looked alike. He had spent an hour sitting on this rock, and his anger was finally beginning to ebb. He gazed at Princess and the others, who he could see had finished lunch and were back weeding in the field in the distance. His stomach growled at the thought of food, but he wasn't thinking about eating or even his latest embarrassment. Sin was thinking about how this village was incredibly odd. Everything seemed fine, but something about this place and these people made him uncomfortable. He was a well-educated man in academics, business, and politics, and he knew that something was amiss. His uncle always told him to trust his instincts in these situations, but to also always discover the reason for any discomfort before acting. So he began listing his observations in his head one more time. Sin was 17, and his uncle had taken him on many business trips in recent years. This village was similar to other places Sin had visited in many ways. It consisted of about a dozen small family huts and a large plank lodge, surrounded by a stout wall made of wood planks. The wall wouldn't keep out an attacking army, but it seemed to have been sufficient to keep the dangers of the forest at bay. There was a stream, a pond, fields, and pastures which provided all the necessities of life. The village appeared to have been in existence for hundreds of years, and everything seemed perfectly reasonable at first glance. The people of this village seemed typical at first as well. They were pleasant and helpful. They had come together to save his life, and most of them had taken the time to visit and get to know him. Many had even brought food or small gifts to assist in his recovery and keep him occupied. At the same time, he knew they were all hiding something. The first oddity was their mysterious past. Even though the village appeared to be very old, Sin didn't sense that this was the villagers' original home. No one would discuss where they were born, how they came to be here, or anything past 5 or 6 years ago. In fact, none of them, except the youngest, appeared to have been born here. Sin worried about what had become of the previous inhabitants of the village when these people arrived. The second puzzle was its complete isolation. Sin knew of several villages which preferred to remain secluded, but none were utterly isolated like this one. There were well-worn paths from the village to the stream and to the pastures, but none penetrated the forest wall. It was now mid-April, and Sin had regained enough strength and mobility to explore his temporary home. He had circumnavigated the edge of the forest and not found a single trail leading into it. The trees and bushes were dense, and none of this season's new plants and flowers at the edge of the forest had been trampled. He was confident that no one had entered or left the valley since he arrived. This level of isolation was long-term suicide for a village, and it made no sense to him. Sin's mind raced to fill in answers, and as much as he tried to remain positive, those answers kept taking on a dark and suspicious timbre. The only explanation that made sense was that these people were hiding. This meant that as friendly as they seemed, Sin had to assume they were outlaws on the run from some heinous crime. He then thought of the highwaymen who had attacked him. What if they were associated with this village? The more he considered this, the more it made sense. Princess claimed that they carried him back to the village after witnessing the attack and the hurried exit of the robbers. But he had been unconscious for days. What if the thieves had loaded him back into his coach and driven him to their secret lair to have him nursed back to health in preparation for being ransomed back to his family? Given no one had left this valley in the past 4 weeks, why would four of them have been out at the road at just the right place and time to witness the attack? He wanted to believe Princess and the others, but he suspected that their story wasn't as likely as his. Sin wasn't sure how to proceed, but he decided not to provide any more information about his family. They were wealthy, and Sin didn't want these people to have any sort of bargaining edge. Besides, not sharing his history felt appropriate, given these people's reticence for sharing theirs. Sin was feeling better at having come up with a plausible theory about what was going on and began formulating a plan of action. He really couldn't do much until he had recovered more thoroughly, but decided to make an effort to learn where he was and precisely when they planned to let him go. He was strategizing how to broach those subjects with Hugh, the de facto village leader, when something nudged him and caused him to topple off the rock. "Are you all right?" came a voice from up the hill. "Those sheep aren't used to strangers being in their pasture and can get a bit curious." It was Bede, the shepherd. Sin dusted himself off, having been knocked over by a curious sheep, and laughed at his panicked feelings. All this thinking about conspiracies was making him jumpy. "I'm fine, thank you," he called up the hill as Bede strolled down. "I was daydreaming and didn't realize I wasn't alone." "I understand. I do it all the time," admitted Bede as he arrived at Sin's Rock. "Daydreaming about what's beyond those trees is a favorite pastime of mine as I watch the flock. My name's Bede, and, as you can see, I'm the village shepherd." "I know," answered Sin. "I've only been able to talk and listen for weeks, so I've learned about everyone in the village. We just haven't had the chance to meet. I'm Sin, the village guest," he added with a lopsided grin. Bede paused for a moment and then smiled. He was suspicious of Sin, but couldn't help but like him. The truth was that up until a few weeks ago, Bede sat up in his pasture, mostly daydreaming about his future with Princess. He pictured the two of them married with a mob of children. He envisioned spending his days on the hill guarding his flock while watching his wife and children play in the village below. That changed after Sin arrived and Princess began fawning over him. At first, Bede was jealous. Then he became furious, watching her spend every waking minute with Sin. The boy was first mad at Princess, then at Sin, then at the gods, and finally, at himself. He felt cheated from his dream. But the more he thought about it, and he had a lot of time to think, the more he felt cheated out of something far more significant. He felt cheated out of life. He had fantasized about Princess because she was the only woman near his age. Princess was the single available woman in this community to marry, and yet, when he was honest with himself, he didn't really like her. Bede had begun to realize that he didn't want Princess. What he really wanted was out. So despite all the cruel things Bede had contrived to say or do to Sin when they finally met, he simply sat down beside him and said, "Yeah, I know who you are. You've really made a mess of it, haven't you?" "It sure feels that way," Sin agreed, noting that the man sitting next to him wasn't at all like he expected. Bede was the only villager who hadn't introduced himself to Sin, which made him seem aloof and even annoyed for some reason. Sin assumed that part of this was due to Bede being antisocial from his occupation, which necessitated him spending most of his time alone, away from the others. He also expected Bede to be somewhat dim-witted. He was clearly wrong on both counts. "May I ask you something that I've been wondering ever since I woke up in this village?" asked Sin. "You can always ask, but I might not answer," replied Bede as he offered Sin a strip of pork jerky. "You see, that reply is an excellent example of what has been bothering me," Sin said as he accepted the snack. "I've visited dozens of villages, and without exception the inhabitants are all uneducated. The people here, and I mean everyone here, sound incredibly smart. You speak more clearly and cogently than the upper class of most towns, and yet you live here in the middle of the wilderness. How can this be?" "Well, that would be due to Hugh," answered Bede, which surprised Sin, who had expected some sort of deflection. "He used to be a schoolteacher long before I was born," Bede continued. "Hugh has a passion for learning and teaches everyone in the village. You see, there is not much to do here in the wilderness, as you call it, during the long, cold winter months. Hugh brings everyone together into the lodge, and we learn languages, math, philosophy, logic, geography, and even military strategy together. It's his way of keeping us warm and safe while building our community. And while we didn't appreciate spending our winters stuck in school very much at first, we've grown to enjoy it." "So you've learned about the world outside, and you daydream about what's beyond the forest. Why don't you just go and see for yourself? What's holding you back?" asked Sin with incredulity. "My friend," Bede answered with resignation as he stood up, "I may wonder about the world, but I will never leave this valley. And now I believe it is time for me to round up a few wayward sheep and for you to return home and rest." Sin stared in disbelief at this learned shepherd with newfound respect. Bede was a 15-year-old farmhand who spoke like a philosopher twice his age. He was a complete enigma, like everyone else here, and Sin wondered if he would ever understand these people, and began to wonder what other surprises they held. Sin still felt that they were most likely outlaws, but was willing to accept that there might be other possibilities of why they were trapped here. However, he also now knew that great care and tact would be required when trying to glean information from any of these highly educated people, especially from their leader, Hugh. Sin was the last to arrive at dinner. He stood outside the lodge for several minutes, bracing himself for the impending ordeal before finally leaning against the door and entering. All the talking and laughing he had heard through the walls dissipated the moment he stepped in, and he started to back out when Orvin's booming voice called out, "Don't be a fool, Sin! Sit down here next to me and get something to eat!" Sin took the proffered seat next to Orvin, who was at the head of the table, and looked down the two long benches. Everyone ate together in this village. It ensured that no one went hungry and that the community stayed together as a tight-knit group. 2 dozen pairs of eyes stared back at Sin in silence. "Well, that was one of the most boneheaded things I've ever seen anyone do," said Orvin. Sin looked down at his lap and felt like he was going to throw up. "But it wasn't nearly as funny as your trick with the goats," Orvin roared out with a hearty laugh, and everyone else joined in. Sin gathered the coarse fabric of his trousers in clenched fists under the table as he struggled to control his rage. He straightened up to defend himself, but Hugh added a comment before he could open his mouth. "And son, the next time you try to impress a young woman with your skill and proficiency, make sure you know what you're doing first." Orvin slapped the table and howled with laughter, and Hugh was laughing so hard he was crying. Sin's mouth dropped open in shock, and he looked across the table at Princess, who was crimson with embarrassment. He relaxed his fists as he saw the rest of the crowd laughing and talking once more. A moment later, Darian the farmer put his arm around him and plunked a mug of meat on the table. "Young man, you might have cost us a few loaves of bread today, but you have given this town a better laugh than we've shared in years. I'm going to be telling this story every year at planting time for the rest of my life. You might not be the best farmer yet, but I still think you have potential. Once you learn the difference between crops and weeds!" Orvin blew the mouthful of mead he had just gulped out his nose, and Darian doubled over with laughter. Even Sin laughed at this and hoisted his mug to a cheerful toast from his neighbors. He glanced at Princess, who smiled at him, but she quickly averted her eyes and blushed again. Sin stayed after dinner to help clean up, but Hugh motioned for him to step outside with him. "Sin, you are a good lad, and my daughter is quite smitten by you," he began. Sin felt the burning glow of a blush rise up the back of his neck and was grateful it was getting dark outside. "You would make a fine addition to this community, and I, for one, would like to have you stay," Hugh continued. "But I suspect that you would prefer to leave this valley and get back to your world." Sin was dumbfounded. This was precisely the conversation he wanted to have with Hugh, but he was utterly unprepared. He started to answer, but Hugh held up his hand to stave him off. "Such a decision should not be hastily made, young man," Hugh continued. "Fortunately, you have some time to consider the alternatives. I will escort you to Wilton should you choose to leave, but Tate says that you need another 2 to 3 weeks to build up enough strength for the journey." "I'm strong enough now," answered Sin, not wanting to risk Hugh changing his mind. "Not according to Tate," Hugh firmly answered, and then sighed. "Remember that we don't possess any horses or coaches, so the journey will be long and it will be on foot. Also, as you know, this part of the road is dangerous and we'll need to move as quickly as possible and be prepared to fight. A weak, slow-moving traveler would never make it to Wilton." Sin saw the wisdom in Hugh's logic and nodded in agreement. "So we will tentatively plan to leave on the May moon unless you decide to stay," concluded Hugh. "The days will be longer, and the nights will be illuminated by the full moon to provide us the most safety. It also means that you have time to regain your strength and to consider what you will be leaving. As I said earlier, consider all your options and their implications. You learned a powerful lesson today about haste. That lesson applies to far more than just crops and weeds. You would do well always to remember it. Have a good night, Sin." Sin watched Princess's father walk back to his hut, and once again marveled at the wisdom of this small town leader. Before the attack, Sin had considered himself to be highly educated, mature, and ready to assume his place in the world. But he was learning more about life, survival, and leadership in this rural outpost than he had from any of his teachers. He committed himself to use these coming weeks to learn as much from these people as he could before he left. Now, however, he was less interested in discovering their past than in learning their wisdom.